This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, it's Triple Crown Day. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona, and you are listening. I don't know where I am, Glenn. I'm trying to do nine things at once between call, blog, talking. Get my phone going. I'm sorry. Let me start over here. See, you got a blooper. Look at that. I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to a special Triple Crown episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 4th, episode 927, brought to you today by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long. Got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I write a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Well, good morning, everybody, on this very special day. It's our Triple Crown episode where we talk all about the race, little race coming up this weekend, and a lot about past Triple Crown winners, and have lots of guests and stuff coming on. But Jamie, are you here and are you feeling better?
Oh my gosh, thank you guys. I'm so sorry. You know when you get a text from me at like 2 o'clock in the morning, nothing good is happening. Sorry about that, Glenn. Yeah, I was so sick. I've never had, I don't know if I had a 24-hour bug or like food poisoning or what, but I swear to you, I threw up on the hour every hour for like 15 hours.
Can you get food poisoning from tofu?
I don't know. I had a bean burrito. Who knows? You know.
Okay. Taco Bell again.
I wish. I went fancy. That's the problem. I probably went too fancy. But yeah, I took Lucas to the doctor yesterday because he had to get his shots, and they put him on the scale, and he weighs like 23 and a half pounds, and then I'm like, can you hold him for a second? And I stepped on the scale and I lost 4 pounds. So yay me.
Oh, there you go. That's all you have to do is get violently ill for a day.
Exactly. I'm like getting a little closer to the pre-pregnancy weight.
Now, unfortunately, a lot of that usually comes back. I hate to tell you.
Hey, I'm going pre-pregnancy weight, okay?
Don't rain on the poor girl's parade. Come on.
Thank you.
I know. She worked hard for an entire day to lose that weight.
Listen, I joined a gym 3 months ago, Glenn, and I have been twice. So how dare you?
So maybe throwing up is a better option.
Yeah, exactly. It's way quicker.
Well, we have a classier show coming up than that today.
Sorry.
We're going to have
Sorry.
A lot of fun. And Jennifer's going to tell us what it is.
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, Breaking from the Gate, Frankie Lovato is our pace setter as we settle in for our all-Triple Crown two-thirds of a show. And then in the home stretch, a pair of equestrian legends join us in what may be the most amazing guest lineup in the long history of this show, Kentucky Derby winning trainer Graham Motion and Olympian Philip Dutton at the same time in a match race. Stay tuned for the fray, folks.
I'm so excited.
Are you going to be able to do this interview? Because I'm not helping you. I'm throwing you under the bus. You have to do it yourself.
Yeah, thanks for that. You better help me. And I feel more prepared than the last time we were supposed to have Philip Dutton on. When I get on the computer at like 5:30 in the morning, it's like, oh, Philip Dutton's in like 20 minutes. I'm like, excuse me, I can't handle the pressure of that. So I feel a lot better. I've done some research and I'm ready for this interview. I'm going to try to remain calm and professional. How's that?
Oh, well, why start that now?
Good luck.
I mean, we haven't done that in 900 episodes.
I'm going to try not to squeal and geek out, okay? And, like, I really think that I should call him Mr. Dutton and Mr. Motion, but, like, Mr. Motion sounds too naughty. So I might just call him Mr. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to call them. I don't feel like I should be able to say their first names. It's like having Penny Chinnery on. I just called her Miss Chinnery. Like, I didn't know what to call her.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing your interview today.
better help.
Only if you promise that when she finally gets Carrie Underwood on, you'll help me when I
Not
can't talk.
Not a chance.
Well, my Daily Whinny is... Oh, you know what? We haven't played this so long, I don't know where it is. There it is. It's a happy birthday to Jennifer and I. We have a friend by the name of Chantel. She lives in the United States. Yes, she does live in the United States, but she also lives in Pennsylvania. And we used to work with her for a long time, and she's a lot of fun. And it's her birthday. So happy birthday, Chantel.
That's funny. You said Chantel. I saw that in the show notes, and I thought it was Chantel Sutherland's birthday. I was like, he is such a stalker. Yep. He's like giving Daily Whinnies to hot female ex-jockeys. Okay, that's hilarious. All right, so my Daily Whinny, because it is the Belmont Bash episode, is it goes to California Chrome, who in my entire life, the horse is in my backyard. I don't know as much about as I do with California Chrome. Like every day I say I'm an avid reader of the Blood Horse, and it's like California Chrome gets a bath. California Chrome goes for a jog. California Chrome gets his picture taken. I swear to you, they are reporting every single thing about California Chrome. And, of course, he's got to get the Daily Whinny because he is about to. I think that the whole entire country, not that it would happen, but if he doesn't win, whoever does win is going to get publicly shamed. Like, you are stealing this from the entire country. You should be ashamed of yourself. It's like if somebody does something and he doesn't win, I don't know what's going to happen to that person, the jockey. I don't know. It's going to be ugly.
I know. Every time he goes on the track from now on, that horse that beats California Chrome, if that happens, is going to be booed. It's going to be bad. I mean,
yeah.
But they're still going to be out there. I mean, this is tough. I can't wait to talk to Graham Motion a little bit about that later on, too, when I ask him, you know, because he's been down that road. So he knows what it's like.
Well, I'll ask what it's like, because you're not going to help me.
I won't talk. No. I thought it would be fun the first half hour of the show today to talk Triple Crown, and then Frankie's going to join us for the second half hour. We could talk more specifically about this year's Belmont and some of the competition for California Chrome. But, you know, the Triple Crown has been elusive for so many years that I just thought it would be fun to look back at some of the horses that have won and some of the names that have won. And I found this ESPN sound file that they put together several years ago, and of course nothing's changed since then because we haven't had a winner. So I just thought it was very interesting, and it really goes through some of the old footage, and I think it's be your first time listening to it, and I think you're going to enjoy it, so take a listen.
America's Racing Triple Crown is considerably younger, but is the primary measuring stick through which our thoroughbred legends are judged. The first Triple Crown winner, Sir Barton, had never won a race when he was entered in the 1919 Kentucky Derby as a pacemaker for stablemate Billy Kelly. But Sir Barton never gave up the lead in the Derby or the Preakness or the Belmont Stakes. News reports of Sir Barton never mentioned the phrase Triple Crown, which was first used to describe the feat in 1930, the year Gallant Fox swept the three races.
Gallant Fox duplicates Sir Barton's feat of winning the Preakness, Kentucky Derby, and Belmont Stakes, America's Triple Crown, a truly great three-year-old.
Gallant Fox's son Omaha became the third Triple Crown winner. When Omaha died in 1959, he was buried in Omaha. In the movie, Seabiscuit won a match race against War Admiral, the very same War Admiral who won the Triple Crown in 1937. 4 years after that, a stretch-running Finnum burst upon the scene.
Whirlaway now joins the exalted ranks of Sir Barton, Gallant Fox, Omaha, and War Admiral as Big Shot number 5 to take the classical Triple Crown.
In 1943, Count Fleet wrapped up his Triple Crown with an exclamation point, a 25-length romp in the Belmont Stakes. Ever heard of the Club-Footed Comet? That was the nickname for Texas-bred Assault, who stepped on a surveyor's stake as a youngster, yet became the 7th Triple Crown winner. And 2 years after that, the Great Citation. Legendary Calumet Farm raced Whirlaway and Citation. Eddie Arcaro rode both horses and said he thought Citation was better. After Citation, a 25-year drought had some critics claiming the series had gotten too tough, that there may never be another Triple Crown winner. Then came Secretariat.
Here comes Secretariat to the wire. An unbelievable, an amazing performance. He is going to be the Triple Crown winner.
The sensational 70s also produced the only back-to-back Triple Crown winners.
They're clearing the finish line and Bill Seattle Slew, and he's opened it up to 4.5.
Seattle Slew still stands as the only undefeated Triple Crown champion. Slew towered over his rivals in 1977, but the next year showcased the most famous rivalry in American racing history.
Affirmed and Alidar heads apart. Affirmed's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
Affirmed, ridden by 18-year-old Steve Coffin, outgutted Alidar in the Derby, Preakness, and Belmont, and perhaps the most magnificent of all Triple Crowns. We didn't know it then, but those memories would have to last us at least 30 years.
So there you go. That gets you a little bit excited about what's coming up. I love that old sound files too, from the races back then. Those announcers always sounded like they were about ready to burst. You know, one of these that I found so fascinating, and I didn't know anything about Sir Barton, and Sir Barton was the first winner in 1919, didn't know anything about Sir Barton, and started doing some reading, and then I found another sound file that ESPN did. You know, I think ESPN actually does the best race coverage, even over NBC, but this was a little sound file that they put together about Sir Barton, and things should never know about the first Triple Crown winner. And did you know that in the early days, there were 2 days between the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness?
Are you serious?
We talk about the short time it takes to, you know, to run them now with 2 weeks between the two. They had 2 days. It was incredible. They used to run these horses.
Oh, and I was going to say, Glenn, in a couple minutes after you play this, I'm going to give you some facts about I've got a fact about Citation that is just crazy. Just crazy. I mean, the way that they ran these horses back then, and they were like tough as nails. I've got some facts that just blow your mind. But yeah, go ahead about Sir Barton.
Sir Barton,
the first horse ever to win.
It's the ultimate challenge, and in the long history of the Triple Crown, it's only been accomplished 11 times.
Sir Barton was the first Triple Crown winner, but no one knew it until the three races were first called that by Charles Hatton many years later. Sir Barton simply won three races called the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont. He was a sore-footed grouch who ignored other horses and hated all humans except his groom, Toots Thompson, not the stuff of which stars are made. He was ridden by Johnny Loftus, whose expectations were not high on Derby Day. Loftus, a member of the Jockeys Hall of Fame, was a master of pace, but Sir Barton at that point was a maiden and never won a race. Owner J.K.L. Ross, a Canadian, brought him to Louisville as a rabbit for his stablemate, Billy Kelly. Trainer Guy Bedwell specialized in making silk purses out of sow's ears. But Sir Barton was a challenge. The plan really was for Sir Barton to go out fast and burn out the other contenders, including the favorite, Eternal, allowing Billy Kelly to come on strong at the end and take the trophy back to Canada. And so it looked for most of the race. But Sir Barton didn't quit. The horse, who had finished 15th in the hopeful as a two-year-old, burned out the favorite all right. Eternal finished 10th, but he also beat his stablemate by 5 lengths and won the Derby. So they decided to try him again only 4 days later in the Preakness at Pimlico in Baltimore. Many thought his win was a fluke, but with only 3 days' rest, Sir Barton took on Eternal again and 9 other more rested horses, and he made believers out of the doubters. Sir Barton took the lead early, once again held onto it all the way, and beat Eternal by a solid 4 lengths. 10 days later, he won the Withers. No doubters now. There were only 2 challengers this time in the Belmont. He whipped them handily to complete his sweep and went on to become Horse of the Year. The next year, he was matched against the new star, Man o' War, in what was billed as the race of the century. In fact, it was no race at all. Man o' War destroyed Sir Barton, who never won another race and soon was retired. He lies today in this small park in Douglas, Wyoming. He was a failure at stud in Virginia and eventually stood at an Army remount station in Nebraska for a fee of $5 to $10. A Douglas man bought him, and sometime after his death, the Junior Chamber of Commerce bought this inexpensive plastic likeness of a horse and buried Sir Barton beneath it.
So some horses get a statue made in bronze. Sir Barton has a plastic horse that doesn't even look like him.
And, his stud, they couldn't afford it. His stud fee was only $5. I mean, good Lord. That's
Isn't that
crazy.
Amazing? Apparently he was a grouch, too. I mean, just hated everybody and everything.
Wonder he was running races every 4 days. I mean, good God. These horses, no wonder they were grumpy. You know, again, I thought I was so clever, Glenn. I got all these Triple Crown facts all put together on the spreadsheet for you. And I think you've covered in the last 2 audio packages, you have covered just about every one of the facts. But I'm going to go over them anyway.
Okay.
I think I'm so smart and you're always like a step ahead of me. I do the work myself. You put in audio that does it. So you're
That's
smarter
right.
than me. Work smarter, not harder.
Yes. I go for work less, not even smarter.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. Well, a couple of these facts are so interesting. And back to Sir Barton, that horse had never won a race. Okay, he had run 6 races. Again, they're 3 years old. He'd already run 6 races and was entered into the Derby to set the pace to be the rabbit for his stablemate. And he was like, no, I got it. And he took it, and then again, like 4 days later, he goes back and wins the Preakness. The next interesting thing is, you know, Gallant Fox won the Triple Crown. And then he was... Then sired Omaha. So his son also won the Triple Crown. And then those were both trained by the same guy named James Fitzsimmons, or they called him Sonny Jim. He's the only person to have trained 2 Triple Crown winners. But there is one trainer that has actually won the Triple Crown, just not with the same horse. Can you guess who that is? In the whole world of horse training, one trainer won the Derby, Preakness, and Belmont all in the same year with different horses.
Don't know.
That would be D. Wayne Lucas. D. Wayne Lucas is the only one to have won the Triple Crown in 1 year, but it was with 2 different horses. Did you know, I guess they said it in the package, but the Triple Crown wasn't even associated with the 3-race series when Sir Barton won it. It was actually coined in 1930 when the Daily Racing Form writer Charles Hatton coined it in describing the sweep of the races by Gallant Fox. Also in 1948, 7 years after he rode Whirlaway, Eddie Arcaro did it again aboard Citation. Now, this is the fact that blows my mind. You know, how many races did Zenyatta win?
19
races. And she started 20 times in her entire career. Citation won 19 of 20 races in 1948. In 1948, he won 19 of 20 races, which included all 3 of the Triple Crown races. They ran these suckers to death. I mean, not to death because they go on to be great sires, but they ran them like crazy. Jimmy Jones, who was the trainer of Citation, said, "Citation was the best horse I ever saw, and I saw Man o' War That's just like, that's the horse everybody compared him to was Man O' War. It's just an amazing Citation. We have to do some package, an audio package on Citation, because he was an absolute monster. Now, in 1946, Assault won the Triple Crown. When he was young, he stepped on what they say is something sharp that went through his front right, leaving him, check this out, 1946, people, 1946, leaving him with a permanent limp when he walked or trotted. Permanent limp at the walk or trot, but at the full gallop, they say Assault was flawless. How quick do you think that they would spin a horse coming up to the starting gates with a limp at the
walk? With a hole in his foot.
A hole in his foot. The sucker can't walk or trot sound, and they're like, oh, put him in the gate. Get him started. Like, that would never happen. Never,
you couldn't
ever,
even get him
ever
into a dressage ring today.
No. They'd be like, oh, sorry, bud.
So what you're saying is Assault won the Triple Crown on three legs. Can you imagine how fast he'd have been? He could use all four.
Right? I know.
Yeah.
Say, like, that package said he was club-footed, but doing the research, like, no, he wasn't really club-footed. He actually, like, injured himself and was lame. He was lame when he walked or trotted. Like, 1946, vet care, they're like, eh.
He was out of the King Ranch, which is that enormous ranch in Texas. I mean, it was just, it was half of Texas was the King Ranch. I didn't know that they were doing thoroughbreds. I only thought they ever did quarter horses, and they were real big in the rodeo side of things. And I didn't know they did the thoroughbreds, so that was a surprise when I saw that.
Yeah, I think they dabbled in it pretty successfully, pulling out lame horses and running them in the Triple Crown. You know, why not? And then Count Fleet won it in 1943, 2 years after Whirlaway. And apparently the John Hertz, who was the owner, hated Count Fleet because he was incredibly ill-tempered and nasty. He had really bad manners. And he tried, I mean, what is, somebody offered them $10 million for California Chrome, $6.1 million for a 51% stake. They all said no. John Hertz could not get somebody to buy Count Fleet, okay, before he won the Triple Crown. He was, like, begging people. He was, like, selling and trying to sell in bottom dollar. But jockey Johnny Longden, who had finally, I guess he wasn't running really well, and Johnny Longden, the jockey, was like, dude, I'm sure he didn't say dude in, like, 1943, but he was like, I finally figured out how to ride him. Don't sell him. He's so ornery that he said, you have to let him just go out to the front and sit there. And then he won every single one of the Triple Crown races. So just pretty interesting how times change.
And if anybody got close, he kicked the crap out of them.
Pretty much. Is Count Fleet, I'm trying to remember who the horse was. There's maybe Jen, you can Google this. There's two horses that are galloping next to each other. And one is, it's a front-on shot, and one is biting the other one, and I don't think it's Count Fleet because it was too early, but do you know what
the picture
I'm talking about?
We've got it.
Google that, and let's find out who that is, because I need to know.
You know, it used to be, too, that in some of those years, the Belmont was before the Preakness. It was actually the other way around, and then it got switched back. So for a couple of those years, it was the other way around. Yep.
Well, all I do know is that the Preakness, the Belmont, is actually predates any of the other races. Okay, I found the image. It's called Talk Amongst Yourselves. I'm looking for it.
I found the one where the two jockeys are beating each other up, but I haven't found the one with the two horses biting each other.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. They actually have that picture in the jockey room at Churchill Downs. When you take a tour of the jockey room, they have it blown up to, like, poster size. And it's supposed to be a reminder of what not to do. Head
oh, really? Play in the 1933 Kentucky Derby is the one with the jockeys fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
I don't remember that one. They were beating each other with the sticks.
Oh, that's what's hanging in the jockey room?
Yes, the one where they were beating each other with the sticks. Yep.
That's hilarious.
And the picture was clearly evident. I mean, they were smacking each other. See, the whips were not originally, the crops were not originally used for the horses. They were originally used for your fellow jockeys. It was only after a while that they figured out if you actually hit the horse with it, it'd go faster.
That's hilarious. Okay. I'm sorry. I found it on Exclusively Equine, but the name of it. Oh, okay. So it says that in this Eclipse Award-winning photo of great prospector trying to bite Golden Derby in 1980. There you go.
Okay.
So that
was later in
time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was way later.
Great prospector biting Golden Derby. There it is.
Great picture. Post that on our Facebook page just so everybody can know what I've been mulling on about for 2 minutes and they've been listening here bored to death. Okay, Glenn, tell us, in 1978, give us an idea of how long ago 36 years ago was.
You know, I didn't really remember how long ago 36 years was either until I found some statistics that you're going to love. Now, I was in 10th grade. How old were you? Were you born yet, you little child?
You were in 10th grade, which makes you, what, like 15?
Yeah, I was about 14 or 15. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
In 1978, I celebrated my first birthday, old man.
Okay, well, you won't remember any of this, but...
No, but I always think it was really cool, and he's always been my favorite because of this, of the fact that Seattle Slough won the Triple Crown the year I was born. So I got to meet Seattle Slough when I lived in Kentucky. I got to go see him. I didn't get to pet him because obviously he would have bit my arm off. But I got to see him and take some pictures of him, and it was really, really cool. I felt like I was meeting, you know, a celebrity because it's Seattle Slough. It was so cool.
Well, in 1978, a couple of things. How about a gallon of gas was 63 cents?
Good Lord.
You don't ever remember it being that low. Yep,
no.
A gallon of gas was 63 cents. A dozen eggs was 48 cents. Whether that's approaching, what, $2 now? A pound of bacon was $1.20. I just paid $5 for a pound of bacon the other day.
Ooh, why are you eating bacon? Don't eat
bacon
anymore.
Oh, you
it's
can't
terrible.
Survive without bacon. Pope John Paul II. Was actually became Pope in 1978. So all growing up, you just knew Pope John Paul was the Pope all growing up. Space Invaders launched in 1978, became one of the top video games ever, Space Invaders. Hungry Hungry Hippos. You remember that game that you used to smack the hippo thing? And
You'd bruise your hand trying to swallow the marbles.
That came out in 1978. Also, toga parties were all the rage. You know, I kind of remember that. Sony introduced, or get this, the Walkman came out in 1978. And that was the cassette version, by the way.
Obviously.
A couple of, now, who won the first U.S. world champion or won the first world championships in eventing in the United States at the Kentucky Horse Park, 1978?
Was that Bruce Davidson?
Yeah, Bruce Davidson, the Bruce Davidson guy. That's right. You know, as far as popular culture are concerned, here's some films that came out that year. And I was trying to see how many of these I actually saw. And it was, I think it was most of them. Grease, Saturday Night Fever. Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out that year. Animal House came out that year. Jaws 2, actually Jaws 1 was earlier than that. Another Star Wars movie came out. Revenge of the Pink Panther came out that year, the first one. And The Deer Hunter came out that year. And now, this makes me feel really old, Jamie, when I'm going to talk about the musicians that are popular that year. The Bee Gees. With Night Fever and Staying Alive. They had two of the top hits that year in 1978. Paul McCartney and the Wings. John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John went on tour together that year.
Oh, my gosh. Did you go? Did you, like, couldn't wait to get tickets?
I didn't see John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. No, I did not. Sorry about that. Rolling Stones, but when haven't they really been popular? I mean, so, you know, not just the Commodores. Now, there's a name you don't hear ever anymore. Three Times a Lady. You hear that played every once in a while. So the Commodores were popular. And now, I don't even know, you're going to know some of these TV shows. But these were the popular TV shows in 1978. And everybody that's my age and listening, I don't know if Frankie's here, but if Frankie's listening, he'll know these. Happy Days.
Sunday, Monday, happy Monday, days.
That's
Tuesday,
it.
Thursday, happy days. Pretty
get this.
Friday,
at the exact opposite of Happy Days, Little House on the Prairie was in the top 10 in 1978. The Rockford Files, my mother's favorite show.
Nope, well, never heard of it.
She used to watch that all the time. Wheel of Fortune started in 1978. That's how long that show's been around.
Was Pat Sajak in charge? Seriously?
Yes.
And Vanna
White?
Yes,
they've done it the entire time. Yes,
oh, my God.
Have.
Kill me. I would kill myself. I would kill myself.
Are you kidding? Vanna makes $10 million a year touching a letter.
I think
I could handle that gig.
Yeah, but that's what you do for a living forever. I remember she wrote a book back in the 80s and my mom bought it. It was like Vanna Talks or something. It was so bad. And I never read it, but I was like, seriously, you bought a book from Vanna White? Really?
Charlie's Angels. Okay, it was popular in 1978, the first one, by the way. The Muppet Show, one of my dad's favorite TV shows. We used to watch it with him all the time.
Call the Muppet Show. See, I can sing theme songs, too. I can sing anything.
Jamie, have you ever, ever seen an episode of The Love Boat?
The Love Boat? No, never.
You really haven't ever seen an episode of The Love Boat?
I was like three when it was out.
The culture the culture. You missed so much culture by missing The Love Boat.
Sorry.
And Three's Company, which was one of the scandalous shows on because, you know, the two girls were living with the guy. And they weren't even, like, sleeping together. And it was still scandalous because those two girls were living with the guy. And by the way, when you were my age, you really wanted to live in that house because they weren't bad looking. So,
really? Were they scantily clad? I can't remember. I obviously don't remember.
Well, scantily clad as they got.
It was like they showed like the neck and wrists of the women.
And
it was like
the leg below the knee. I mean, yeah.
Oh, my God.
All right, let's take a break for our commercial from Back on Track. By the way, all of those things were what happened the last time we had a Kentucky Derby winner in 1978. Let's hear from Back on Track, and then Frankie Lovato is going to be joining us, and we're going to be talking about what's happening on Saturday and the horses that are running.
Hold up. No, sorry, play the commercial. Jennifer just typed that Frankie was there at the race when the one horse bit the other horse. That is what we're talking about first.
Okay, cool.
Listeners have been asking why Back on Track products work and what is the science behind them. Well, they have evolved from a combination of ancient Chinese wisdom and modern science as well as skilled textile production. This result is a polyester polypropylene fabric with a ceramic powder that's melted into the fabric's very own weave. The ceramic particles reflect body heat as an infrared wave, a form of energy with a highly documented pain-relieving effect. This reflected heat helps to ease inflammation, reduce muscle pain, and increase blood circulation. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your horse's muscles before exercise, thus reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, the product's dual capacity to prevent injury as well as ease and expedite the recovery of already present injuries is what makes Back on Track products so unique. I hope that helps as to why their products are so effective. Visit them at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com.
And the title of the photograph is called The Savage. Frankie, is this true? You were there?
I was there, yeah. I had to ride the next race, but I was riding at Belmont Park, and this was 1980, and I was an apprentice that year. And I did not ride that race. That was the Tremont Stakes. But I was watching two of, like, one of my favorite riders. There was George Velasquez and Daryl McCarg, the two jockeys. And I was, you know, they were kind of like my heroes. And so I'm watching them go down the stretch, and it looks like George Velasquez just getting ready to pass him. It was just right at the finish line. And this horse reached out to take a bite out of the other horse, and everybody in the jock's room just, it was like a deep gasp of, did you see that? It was kind of funny, and the horse got himself beat because of it.
I was going to say, did he go on to win, or did it really screw him up?
I think, if I remember correctly now, this is 30 blah, blah years ago.
Come on, Frankie.
It was 1980, so, I thought that it got the horse beat. That's how I remember it, but, you know, brain cells play tricks on you. But.
Does that happen often?
No, I mean, but it happens. A lot of times you just don't see it. And Jennifer was asking me before I came on air, she said, did you ever have a horse do that? And I said, yeah, it doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes you could be back in the pack and you don't see it, or it's just not as prevalent as it was. That was a big stakes race, and everybody
caught
saw
it. Caught on film. Caught
yeah.
Right. Smack in the middle of a great picture. He ended up winning an Eclipse Award
yeah.
for the photo, actually. So it's called The Savage. That's cool you were there, Frankie.
Yeah.
Gosh, we get all our insider scoop from you.
And you know,
well, wait a minute. What? We need to know, Frankie, were you there in 1933 when that other iconic photo of the two beating each other, the jockeys just walloping each other, were you there?
Oh, of course. You know I was there for that one, too.
Frankie, punch him in the mouth.
I can't reach. But, you know, that photo went on to win an Eclipse Award, which was the same year that I won the Eclipse Award, which was kind of neat because Bob Coglanese, who is the racetrack photographer, his son's now taken over the business there, but they've been a long-time tradition there at the New York Racing. That's Belmont Aqueduct and Saratoga, the track photographers. And he got an Eclipse Award, a well-deserved Eclipse Award for that. So we actually traveled, not that we traveled in the same plane, but we had to go out to California that year for the ceremonies, for the Eclipse Award ceremonies. So it was kind of neat to see him win an Eclipse Award for that photo.
This story just gets better and better. You guys shared Eclipse Awards. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of neat.
Very cool. Well, Frankie, you are actually here to help us review the entries for Saturday. I don't know why. I mean, there's only one potential. Oh, but yeah, I guess we have to pick second and third if you're a betting person. So we're going to see what is going to happen on Saturday. You sounded a little skeptical, and I'll get your opinion in just a second. The post time is 6:52 Eastern Standard Time, 6:54, 3:52 if you're on the West Coast. The post position draw is actually taking place this morning at 11 a.m. Eastern. NBC is doing all the coverage. They start coverage at 2:30 p.m. on Saturday through 4:30, and then that's NBC Sports. And then NBC takes over at 4:30. At 7, the post-race coverage shifts back to NBC Sports Network, and I'm hoping that they just are drinking champagne and celebrating because the record has been dropped of 36 years. However, we do have to discuss some of the horses, and let's start with, let's just skip the obvious, and let's go down through the list, if you want, can, Frankie, and talk to me about what you're feeling as far as some of the other horses.
The only other, I mean, the horse that really stands out because of the distance and Belmont, all the connections and the horses, past performances, pedigree is Wicked Strong, and he looks to be a very, very big threat. That it looks like the distance should suit him the best, and coming into the race, he skipped the Preakness. You know, you could look at that a couple of different ways, but under great connections and Jimmy Jerkins, the trainer, he could be the big upset, but not shocking.
He was fourth in the Kentucky Derby.
And I mean, you know, horses, when you talk about trips and distances, and when you got a 20 horse field opposed to a horse like Wicked Strong, you know, you're less traffic, you're dealing with more time to get into rhythm, and that makes you a much bigger threat coming into this race. Now, if it was coming into a mile race where it was a full field, you know, I wouldn't consider him so much of a threat as I do with this distance and the way that the field is shaping up.
Now, so you like Wicked Strong. Tell us a little bit. I'm kind of looking at the horse named Commissioner. Commissioner is a son of AP Indy, and this is would be the last chance for AP Indy to win one of the classic races, one of the Triple Crown races. He has had, I think it would be his second or third to win the Belmont. Trained by Todd Pletcher, own jockey is Javier Castellano, and what do you think about Commissioner?
You know, I don't know much about the horse. AP Indies are, like, there is some, I mean, as far as pedigree goes, AP Indy himself, this is where he excelled and a lot of his offspring. But I don't know the horse, and I think that it's a bit ambitious to throw him into this race, but anything can happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, you say anything can happen, and when you compare a race like the Belmont to a race like the Kentucky Derby, where you cram 20-something horses in the starting gates, and then you let them go for a mile, you know, for the mile and a quarter. You've got a mile and a half. You've got a lot fewer horses. How much of the anything can happen thing dissipates? I mean, it is still horse racing, but it should be a little more predictable, right?
Yeah, you can like some of the things that could happen. There's different scenarios that some of the things that can happen, there'll be less of a chance of this, but some of those other things that can happen, there's more of a chance of that. So what I mean by that, the Belmont had less horses, but a much longer distance, bigger turns. That'll help some of the traffic sort out. But where the factor can really, really change things opposed to the Derby, you can pretty much count on the Kentucky Derby with 20 horses. You can pretty much count on a pace that where the fractions will be true and honest and fast. When you get to a race like the Belmont, the pace becomes and the distance, the pace becomes very tricky because you might get a soft first quarter. Or maybe an honest first quarter, but then the second quarter they might try to back it up, which means the horses in front will try to slow it down a little bit to try to reserve something. But there's so much the horses are – there's going to be horses that are going to press that. So many Belmonts have been ruined because of – and when I say ruined, I mean it just a horse like California Chrome, where he could be sitting in the nice, comfortable pocket, could get pressed by someone – while there's still a mile left of the race.
Right.
So that's what makes it so rare and so difficult. We talk about Triple Crown not being won since 1978. Well, there was three races that I thought of this morning that should have, horses that I thought should have won the Belmont, should have won the Triple Crown. And one of them was Spectacular Bid, which was an obvious one, mm-hmm. where he made a middle move down the backstretch when there was still three-quarters of a mile left to run, set some fractions. And there's no horse ever in history that can hold up to that. And he got tired, wore out. And another one was Real Quiet, who got beat the dirtiest nose. Do you remember that one, Jamie?
Oh, my God, that one killed me. I just knew he had it. And then just like... What was the thing? We should have had a horse with a bigger nose that day.
Well, you know, that was one of those races. He was in front one step before the wire and one step after the wire, but he just lost by the bob of the head. That other horse got his nose down. It was like, holy smokes. So that was another one. Real Quiet had made the lead real early around the last turn and heading into the stretch, and you can see him, like when horses make the lead soon like that, and there's the crowd and all that, his ears went up, he started waiting, he turned off, he lost his concentration, and I mean that's where Kent Asormo rode him, and I mean he was just like, oh my God, please horse don't stop now, which is a really bad feeling, but I mean he should have won.
I was galloping at Keeneland that year, and I just remember I was watching the Belmont at Keeneland on a little TV with a whole bunch of jocks and exercise riders and trainers, and everybody was like piled around it, and we all were like, I mean, it was like dead silent after the race. It was just awful. It was just awful. So yeah, it's definitely one of those that you always think of. Now, who's your third?
Smarty Jones.
Oh God!
I thought he was the best horse in the race, and this is what scares me. I mean, he looked like he could not be beat, and he had beaten all the other contenders, and some of them, there were some new players in there, and I think it was Bergstone that wore him down, but. Smarty Jones was in perfect spot, like he's kind of running style and kind of horse like California Chrome. And when he got just turning down the backside, he got pressed by a long shot. Like the race just was. I was watching it and I was like, oh no! You know, some horse started chasing him when there was still a mile left to run, and where he inherited the lead, they went soft, decent, honest fractions the first 3/8, half a mile, and then there was about a quarter of a mile they picked up the pace, and you know, it just was like it broke my heart when I saw that unfold, and it's just so unfair.
Now, as a jockey, though, when something like that happens, and you know, it could certainly happen to Victor Espinosa, it won't, but now, aren't you, as a jockey, you guys have clocks in your head, and you're like Smarty's jockey should have been like, okay, he's pressing way too early. This is going way too fast. Did he try to slow him down? I don't know what happened.
Well, he had the brakes on, but what happens sometimes when a horse presses you, collars you, it makes your horse anxious. So even though you're saying, you know, you're, like basically the jockey is Smarty Jones, you know, if anything, he's like, whoa, boy, easy, not now, easy. You know, you're like everything patting him on the neck, please don't. But you also cannot give up your spot. So, you know, in a perfect world, if someone collars you and you have a lot of time and you have a lot of confidence with your horse, you might be able to go ahead and let that horse go. But in this case, the horse just collared him, and Smarty Jones was not going to let him by. So Smarty Jones got anxious. Stuart Elliott was Smarty's jockey, tried to slow him down, had the brakes on, and then another horse from the inside started pressing as well, and that's just when everything just fell to pieces. So Smarty Jones made an easy lead by the time those other two horses kind of faltered, so they kind of burned him out. So he makes an easy lead turning for home, but he started getting tired, and here comes a horse out of nowhere in the middle of the track that can wear him down. So that's my biggest my concern with California Chrome.
Yeah, that's tough. Now, the other horse that scares me is Commanding Curve coming up for the Belmont because, you know, he finished second in the Derby, and he's right up there, and he's a little more rested. You've got Dallas Stewart, the trainer, Sean Bridgemahan, which is, I know you're a fan of his, as the jockey. What do you think of his chances?
I think his chances are great. Same thing as Wicked Strong. These are horses that seem to have the long-distance race like the Belmont. They seem to have that longevity where they're grinders. They're just, you know, they can keep going and going and going. They're not going to get mixed up in a speed duel. They're not going to get caught being pressed or any of those things that I worry about a horse that has a little bit of pace, like California Chrome. They're going to be somewhere where they're going to pick up the pieces, and that makes them a big threat.
Man, okay.
All right, guys, it's time. It's time to make our picks. Now, we've done all so well this year. Thank
Speak
God
for
we weren't
yourself.
Betting.
Speak for yourself.
Some of us did better than others.
Somebody said that on Facebook, they said, because I've been watching the TV show Horse Players so religiously, that I've gotten better at picking.
I'm sure that was it. I'm sure.
Hey, Frankie, have you seen that TV show yet?
What show is this?
It's called Horse Players. It's on the Esquire Network.
Okay,
and
no, I haven't.
Oh,
I
my
haven't.
Gosh. I've watched every single one of them.
Have
there's
you?
Some really likable people, and there's some really crazy people on it. And it is, I don't like, not that it's a reality show, but it's kind of a reality show, and I don't usually like them. But this one, I mean, it's all about horses. Like, they actually showed last season one of the undercard races of California Chrome coming up as a two-year-old and him winning the race. And it was like, that was the first time I was introduced to California Chrome, and they go through the Breeders' Cup, and they go to the Derby, and they do all the Triple Crown. It's awesome. And so I really do feel like I've gotten better.
Oh, well.
beat you guys all the whole year, so come on.
Yes, you have. Jamie definitely is leading this little competition. All right, I'll lead off. And I will say that it breaks my heart that I'm dropping Rosie Napravnik. She has done nothing for me in my betting on these races.
Fine.
She's riding General A-Rod, and we know from experience in the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness that General A-Rod is now doomed to last place. So, Rosie, I'm sorry. I have to bail. It's money, after all. So I am going to go with the obvious. I'm going to go California Chrome. Then I'm going Commanding Curve and Wicked Strong. So, Jennifer, write that down. Those are the three in that order. I'm going to put my trifecta on.
Okay.
California Chrome, Commanding Curve, Wicked Strong. Frankie.
Frankie, Age Before Beauty. Go ahead.
I'm very much like Glenn. The two biggest threats to California Chrome are Wicked Strong, and I feel Commanding Curve. But California Chrome on top because we do not want to beat him. We want him to win.
That's right.
We want to see history made. So I'm California Chrome, Wicked Strong, and Commanding Curve.
See, the ones I've had picked out for you guys. I'm going to get a little crazy, okay? Are you ready for this?
We're ready.
I'm such a fan of Ride on Curlin. I really like that horse. And you know, it's probably too much distance. He's probably tired. But I'm going to take him in third place. John Velasquez is up. Ride on Curlin is going to be my third pick. Now, Frankie?
Yes.
I don't want to hear it, okay?
No.
I don't want to hear it. But I'm going to take Matuzak as my second place because it's written by Mike Smith, and Mike Smith always comes in second. Thank you very much. So
oh,
Matuzak.
Man. Mike would not like to hear that. But, wow, talk about the connections and karma and all that stuff. You got Mike Smith and Bill Mott.
Mm-hmm.
So those guys, those two are lethal together. I mean, if
they're going to be lethal in second place behind California Chrome, baby. And I swear to God, if Mike Smith with Matuzak edges out California Chrome by a nose, I'm calling some pipe hitting people and they're going to find him. And because that will ruin my life. Mike Smith will have officially ruined my life. So he better come in second place.
Jennifer always has some great unusual picks. So what is it, Jennifer?
Well, I am going to go with California Chrome. See, I can't do it.
No.
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to finish saying it. It's going to jinx him.
No,
I'm going to put California Chrome in third.
Third.
Third?
I'm going to jinx him.
Okay, all right.
If I say first, he's going to come in eighth. So he's third.
Yeah.
We're going to go with that.
Stick with your program here.
Stick with the program. It's working so far. And then I'm going to go with a dead heat for second place. Between Commissioner and Matterhorn, because statistically Todd Pletcher has more horses enter Triple Crown races than any other human being on the earth, and he's just going to have to win something sometime.
That's the old.
You put enough tickets in the hat, you're eventually going to win. Is that it?
And also the jockey undecided is on a real winning streak.
The jockey undecided.
God, he is a great jockey. Love that guy.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Jose Undecided Jr. The leading jockey from Panama.
I love that guy.
You know, there's actually a funny story with a jockey that Geraldo Castines came to America, and I think he was Panamanian. But his agent told him that he was the leading jockey, leading turf jockey of Panama. And it was a great gimmick, and he went on to do very, very well and was a successful jockey. And then someone found out that there was no turf racing in Panama.
No.
So it wasn't a lie because he actually, no one was to the top because there was no turf in Panama.
Right. We get it, Frankie. That's hilarious. So question for you, Frankie, before we let you go, and I know we've run out of time, but as a jockey, California Chrome, America's horse, I'm using little finger quotes, America's horse, everybody and their brother is pulling for California Chrome. Everybody's pulling for California Chrome. What about every other horse in the race? Like, are these jockeys thinking, I'm going to get you, sucker? Or are they like, I'd be okay with second place?
Well, I think everybody goes into it. You know, they don't want to be the one that beats them, but they don't want to not win. You know, everybody wants to win this race. That's whether you're in it or not. But as a jockey, I was fortunate enough to ride in the Belmont many years ago, and you don't go into it thinking you're going to spoil someone else's party. You're going into it thinking, how can I win this race, and any means possible. So, of course, you don't want to be the well, actually, maybe you do.
Exactly. You're a nice guy. What about Rosie Dubravnik? I mean, she's hardcore.
Flesh-eating.
Mike Smith over here, flesh-eating. He's like, I'm going to take down California Chrome. I'm going
to
come in. Just to piss me off. God.
Now, we were talking about it earlier, Frankie. Let's say, you know, Matuzak wins the race and, you know.
Watch your mouth.
When that horse goes in the track, from now on, he is going to get booed. They're going to throw things at him. I mean, you want to be the horse that beats California Chrome, but in a way you don't want to be. You know what I mean?
Of course. But, yeah, you still want to win it. I'm sorry. If I had a horse in the Belmont, I want to win it. You know,
the money's still pretty good.
Yeah, the money, but also, I mean, you want to win.
Yeah.
That's why we do this. We do crazy things for a chance to win a race, and especially a Grade 1 event like the Belmont Stakes.
All right, we'll leave
Frankie.
It at that.
Yeah, we'll leave it with that, and I hope obviously most of our picks come in first. And Jennifer, I hope that you're wrong again. So take one for the team. Nice job. Well, Frankie, thank you so much. I just love having you on. It's always a pleasure. And hopefully we'll be celebrating on Saturday.
Yes. Let's go California Chrome. Let them roll.
And to give a little plug for Frankie, it's Equisizer.com, right, Frankie?
Yes. Yes. Equisizer.com.
Hey, before we let you go, real quick, Popcorn, how's the pony?
Pony is doing awesome. The vet came out and saw him, and he says he's a 6 out of 9.
Oh, God.
His heartbeat was good, so his cholesterol's down.
God.
Got a little treadmill for him. No, I'm just kidding. He's doing great.
Can you actually make Popcorn into an Equisizer so he gets some exercise, for crying out loud? God.
That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea.
And the website is it Equisizer.com, Frankie?
Yes. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and in fact, you know, Victor Espinoza is one of our customers, and there was a great video. Maybe I could post it on your page. There was a great video of him warming up on the Equisizer before the Preakness Stakes.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
please.
Yeah, so
do that. Yeah.
I'll do that. I'll share that on your page. It's pretty cool.
Does it have a blade?
All right, guys. Have a great day. Have a great Belmont. Safe for everyone. And go Chrome. Bye-bye.
Go Chrome.
I want to know if the Equisizer is chestnut with a blaze. I mean, come on.
Well, there's somebody that wrote a song, and we have to play it. We just played it, I know, about 2 weeks ago, but we have to play it again because she wrote it for this race. She wrote it for the horse, Bring It On Home Chrome by Templeton Thompson. And then coming right up after that, we have a couple of, little guests, three-time Olympian Philip Dutton and Kentucky Derby winning trainer of Animal Kingdom, Graham Motion. Are both going to be on. Jennifer's going to try and get them on the line right now. So we'll be back with them in just a minute.
Bring it on home, Chrome.
Our friend Templeton Thompson with Bring It On Home Chrome. I sure do hope I see that on NBC this week or we hear it there. You're listening to Horses in the Morning, our special edition here for the Triple Crown and also for the Belmont. And we are brought to you today by Back on Track Products. We're also brought to you by another great company called EquityMFG.com. It was a lot of fun. We had Jennifer's family out yesterday, and her brother, David, is a bit of a gearhead. And one of the most fascinating things he found while he was here was the Shaken Fork by Equity. He thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I guess, Jennifer, in the old days, David had to clean a stall or two. So he saw the value in having a manure fork that does all the work and saves about half the bedding and half the time, and was pretty impressed by it. And one of the things that he was really surprised at is the amount of power it has. You know, when you look at it, you wouldn't guess that there's a it's got torque. There's a motor in there, and it's got, I mean, you can put the heaviest piles of manure on there. It's not going to phase them at all. So, and one of the neat things about the trigger in this motorized manure fork is that when you press the trigger, you can control the speed. You can go slow or fast. You know, it's just not on or off. So that's kind of cool. It's just one of the neatest manure forks ever invented. You can find all of their manure forks and all the different products at EquityMFG.com. Used by all the hosts and probably about half the listening audience listening now has ordered one. And if you're not one of the cool kids, if you haven't ordered yours yet, go to EquityMFG.com. And I know they're a little bit more expensive, but they're going to last you 10 times longer. And you will never use another manure fork again after you've used Equity's products. EquityMFG.com. Think, Jamie, that we are good to go.
Well, I am here with some very special guests, Glenn, and we have on the phone right now Olympian Philip Dutton and Kentucky Derby winning trainer Graham Motion. Good morning, guys.
Hi there. Good morning. How are we doing?
Well, we're doing fantastic. Thank you guys both so much for joining us. I don't think we've had this much star power on the line together ever. This whole thing might explode.
That seems unlikely.
Well, Philip, good morning. Did we catch you on the back of a horse?
No, I'm sitting down, so you can ask me anything you want.
Oh man, watch out. And then Graham, are you at the track right now or are you home?
I am, yeah, we're actually training right now.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you guys have formed a partnership of sorts, and I was hoping you could maybe tell everybody what it is. Graham, if you want to get started.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it was really my wife's idea. It's something she's always wanted to do. We feel very strongly about taking care of the thoroughbreds after they're retired and finding other careers for them, and it's something that we've tried to do over the years, and it was, you know, we just had an opportunity with Ichabod Crane to actually do it ourselves, and we'd wanted to have a situation where we could send Philip a nice horse. We've actually tried to send him a couple before, but he's usually sent them back pretty quickly. So we like Ichabod Crane a lot. We really thought this was one that he would like and that we could all have some fun with. And it was nice that, you know, Earl Mack was generous enough to let Anita and I have him after his racing career was done. And so then it was up to Philip to see how he handled it.
So, Philip, he sends you this gelding, and what was your first impression?
Well, the first impression was good. I mean, I rode him in our indoor arena, which there was a lot going on at the time, and usually is, lots of horses going everywhere. And he took it all in and looked at everything and handled himself really well. And so my first impression was that, here's a really calm, cool gentleman that wanted to work and wanted to try something new.
So, how were you two originally introduced? Have you known each other for a long time? You're both kind of up in the same area. Is it just through big names kind of thing?
I mean, obviously we're in the same area, so that was part of it. You go ahead, Philip. No, I mean, I think, you know, obviously I heard so much about Graham, but then through mutual friends, we got to know each other a bit more and had a lot in common. And there was,
was sort of branched out on a, you know, semi-business partnership as well. And, you know, it's been incredible for Evie and I to sort of work with Graham and Anita and, you know, get to know what they do a little bit more. And, you know, and obviously Ichabod Crane. And we all have the same goals in that we believe, really believe and owe a lot of our careers to the American thoroughbred, you know, obviously in different ways. I've ridden lots of American thoroughbreds in my sport and to the Olympic Games a couple of times. And so, you know, it's certainly an area that, you know, is becoming, a lot of people are paying a lot more attention to it now, what happens to the horses after they race. And it's sort of neat for us to be able to show a horse that actually spent years and years racing and was very, very good at it and see what he can do attempting another sport. And, you know, it's not an easy ask either because, you know, if in human terms, it would be like, you know, a great runner trying to become, you know, a really top-class tennis player or baseball player or whatever. And it's very rarely that done to try to get the highest level in two sports. And so what the little guy's trying to do, it's pretty remarkable, and he's off to a great start with it.
Well, and we'll definitely get to that, but what do you think, Philip, backing up, what sort of traits do you look for in an off-the-track thoroughbred to become a successful eventer?
Right, well,
I'm
obviously...
taking notes,
it's...
by the way.
Sorry?
I said I'm taking notes, by the way.
Right. Well, I mean, sort of look for maybe what you might call a more an old style of thoroughbred horse, so a big boned, raw boned, you know, what we call nice big moving horse, so a horse that when he trots he covers the ground and spends time in the air when he moves. And the disposition is one of the keys, and that is you know, that they can accept training and riding on a daily basis. And you know, it's obviously such a different life for the horse. There's so much emphasis in the race off at galloping, and what we teach them is, you know, completely different. And so they have to spend a lot more time with the rider every day, and it takes a long time to teach a horse. So you know, we're talking years and years. And so having a horse that can handle that kind of training mentally is probably the key. And obviously a horse that naturally can jump, and you know, there's a lot goes into picking the horse, but you know, I would say that his attitude to the new job is probably the most important.
And do you find, Philip, Grandma, I'll get to you in just a second, sorry, as Ichabod raced until he was six, do you find that it's harder to transition the kind of older thoroughbreds into a new career? And do you have any advice for those of us who might be dealing with one of those challenges in my backyard, our backyard right now?
Right. Well, I think every horse is an individual, and I think a lot of the way that Ichabod's disposition is a credit to Graham and how he's handled the horse. And so he hasn't, you know, what you call fried his brain. And so, you know, I think every horse is different in where they've raced and how many times they've raced. And, you know, ideally, I guess, from my point of view, the less racing is probably better. You know, they've got less wear and tear on them and you know, not maybe set in their ways. But having said that, I don't think it's affected Ichabod one little bit, you know, racing for 4 or 5 years. I think, as far as from my point of view anyway, he's transitioned beautifully.
And, Graham, what do you think... I almost feel like you're a little bit of a pioneer in keeping track of your ex-racers and trying to make sure that they're going to places and having careers. What do you think was the kind of – why are you so different than the rest of the trainers? Is it your wife that makes you keep track of all of them? I feel like there's not enough of that in the game, and I applaud you for it.
Well, I think we're seeing it more and more. I mean, I'd like to think there's a lot of us out there now that are really keeping our eyes on the horses after they leave us. And I think Philip touched on it. You know, these thoroughbreds, they give us so much, and I think this is just an opportunity for us to give them something back, and it's something that my wife and I feel very strongly about. And Sue, in my front office, you know, she's been very, she's been a big part of placing horses in the area. You know, fortunately, we're in an area where it's not hard to place horses, whether it's fox hunting or showing or just, you know, taking for trail rides. It's very easy to find homes for horses around here, and it's something we believe in, and, you know, we try to keep track on some of the horses that we lose in claim races. It's very hard to keep track on all of them, but we put a sticker on the passports or the papers for all our horses so that, you know, people can get in touch with us if they find one of our horses in an awkward situation. So it certainly is something we feel strongly about, but I think it's something that the industry as a whole is much more aware of nowadays.
Wow, that's awesome. So you put a sticker just on the papers from wherever they go, they can always kind of make their way back to you. I know that you have a like Racing Warriors page on your website, and tell us about some of the other second careers your retirees have.
Yeah, I mean, there's several of them, and it's hard for me to remember all of them. We had a nice horse called Better Than Bonds, who's actually his owner recently passed away, but he was one of our favorite horses, and he went on to, you know, a decent show jumping career. And I think there's been several of them that have done similar things. But it's not even so much the ones that go on to the bright lights as perhaps the ones that have become, you know, really fun hunters for families to have and to get a lot of pleasure out and for the horses to get pleasure out of.
Wow. I mean, I just love that you do that, and you're making it the norm to keep track of these guys and to find them different careers. So, Philip, back to Ichabod, what do you see for him in the future? I know you've done some beginner novice, and you're thinking of taking him. Have you done a novice with him yet?
Yeah, so he's done two novices now, so he's moved up one level, and I would anticipate that he'll be ready to move up another level by the end of the year. You know, he's a pretty quick study in our terms. I mean, in racing terms, you know, it probably seems very slow, but he's really taken to it. And I certainly do not want to push him past what he's ready to do, but I think that he'll be more than ready for the next level by, you know, I would say, you know, September, something like that.
See, I feel especially, I don't know if it's just out here on the West Coast, but I feel like a lot of people get these horses, and I don't know how they do it, but they really rush them up through the levels. Like, I took lessons with somebody that didn't believe in ever going beginner novice, and I really think that level was put into eventing for a reason, and I appreciate that you are taking your time with him. Not that my opinion matters, but I really do. I think it's great what you're doing. Philip, how many of your horses in your barn would you say are off the track thoroughbreds?
Not as many as before. I mean, certainly with the value of event horses now, there's a big push for what, you know, you might call sport horse breeding, and so. But I would say probably 25% of mine are, you know, 20 to 25% of the thoroughbreds off the track. And, you know, we're certainly, you know, I think it's fair to say if you do get the best thoroughbred, the right type of thoroughbred, that, you know, you've got a partner that's going to be pretty special and try really hard for you. So we're always on the lookout. I mean, it's just, it's, you know, it is a special horse that we need, certainly for the upper levels of eventing. And so just they're hard to find, not just as event as thoroughbreds, but any kind of horse, they're hard to find. You know?
Right. Now, on a personal note, Graham and Philip, I'll ask Graham this first. What is your favorite horse that you've ever worked with? Was it Animal Kingdom?
You know, it's so hard because the horses like Animal Kingdom and Better Talk Now, you know, they did so much for my career professionally, and you know, they were also horses that you become very attached to for that reason. So, but the horses like Ichabod Crane, I mean, he was a hard-knocking horse himself, and, you know, the reason that we really felt he'd do well with Philip was because of his nature and his disposition, and he was always sort of a barn favorite for everybody, and we just felt that he'd be a really good fit. We have a filly right now called Inimitable Romani, who's really stepped up this year and won several graded stakes. I'm hoping she could be a Breeders' Cup type horse, and she has a very similar disposition, just a very kind, easy horse to have around. And she's now a six-year-old. So obviously the longer you have them around, certainly the more you become attached to them.
Well, you certainly know your way around the Breeders' Cup wins, especially the Filly and Mare Turf. In 2010, you took that one. So you're the guy to go to for that. Philip, this must be a tough question for you, but who do you think is your favorite horse?
Yeah, actually, it's not a tough question. So I flew over this country with a horse called True Blue Girdwood, who was an Australian thoroughbred that he has by a American sire called Loosen Up, and he took me to my first Olympics, and I would think if he didn't come around, I'm not sure my career would be where I got to today. So it's, without doubt, he was with me when I didn't have any other horses, and so he sort of started me down this road. So that one stands out to me.
Yeah, heard of him.
Well, Graham, one final question. We'll let you guys go. How, you know, the excitement, we did this whole entire show about the Triple Crown and about California Chrome. How, isn't it really important for racing that we get this win this weekend? Just the excitement around this horse has been more than we've seen it in recent years, certainly.
I mean, I think it's an extraordinary amount of pressure on the horse and the connections. I think just the fact the attention it's brought in the last 3 weeks is great for the game. You know, unfortunately, it's going to be really tough for him to win this race, and I'll be rooting for him as much as anybody, but there's a reason that it hasn't been done for a long time, and there's a couple of really nice, fresh horses coming in here on Saturday that are going to make it hard for him. But I think just the attention he's brought in the last few weeks is good for the game. I'm not sure that it's going to be the big cure-all that racing sort of believes it might be if he does win the Triple Crown, but obviously it'll be a big shot in the arm.
Oh, my gosh, I can't believe the coverage. It's like every day I log onto the Blood Horse or Facebook, and it's like, California Chrome gets a bath. California Chrome goes and eats grass. I'm like, I can't imagine the amount of pressure. It's like paparazzi surrounding you all the time all of a sudden. Graham, I'm sure you dealt with quite a bit of that with Animal Kingdom. Does that detract from the whole thing, or does it pump you up a little bit?
I tell you, it's tough. I mean, I can't imagine what these guys are doing with this. For me, just the 2 weeks between the Derby and the Preakness was almost overwhelming. I felt very strongly about trying to do everything I could because I think it's the one time where racing really gets the attention, and you kind of need to we need to take advantage of that, if you like. So I tried to do everything I could as far as the media requests and what have you, and I think these guys have done an amazing job, and I really can't imagine how they've kept up with it, to be honest. It's a lot.
Philip, is your money on California Chrome?
Yeah, I hope so. It's like everybody, I've followed it, and I think it's such a neat story, just the way that these guys have come into it, and basically got this horse that any expert would have told you which would be running and claiming races, and that comes through, and they seem like real characters as well. So.
And who doesn't want to see a bunch of dumbasses win a Triple Crown?
So great. Well, we're going to let you guys go. Philip, give everybody your website, and then Graham, you can too, just to let everybody know where to find out more. Philip, it is a dream of mine to ride in a clinic with you, so get out here to Phoenix as soon as possible, okay?
Yeah, I was just at Fresno in California, actually on the weekend. So, yeah.
18-hour drive, no big deal, I'll do it.
All right, yeah.
Philip, what's your website?
Just philipdutton.com.
There you go. And then Graham?
The same, grahammotion.com or herringswellstables.com.
There we go. We'll go ahead and put a link to those up on our Facebook page so everybody can just click to it and see the interesting stuff and the great pictures and stories. And you guys, I can't thank you enough for what you're doing for Ichabod and for racing and off the track thoroughbreds. You guys are, I'm so glad you're working together. You're pioneers.
Thank you, guys.
Be honest, I think we're lucky to be in the position to do it, too. Yeah. Thank you.
And thanks for taking advantage of that. You guys, we'll talk to you again soon. Best of luck. Philip, we'll see you with the blue ribbon on in training soon.
Well, how cool is that? That is so cool.
Oh, my gosh. I can die now.
You didn't panic. You're fine.
My blood pressure's up. I've tried to remain calm all morning long. I feel like, I almost feel like I've done a better show not drinking coffee this morning and trying to remain calm. How do you think I've done? Like, I feel like I've been my perky self, but I almost feel like I've been a little more clear.
You haven't been jittery? No, I thought you...
clear, less excitable.
I told you I was going to throw you under the bus, and I kind of did. But I asked one question at the end.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that.
We kind of have a little chat going on in the background during the show because we are at a major disadvantage of other morning talk shows where they're sitting right across from each other. So yeah. They can point to each other or, you know, say you next and that kind of thing. Plus they have 85,000 commercials that they play so they can talk in between the commercials.
Yeah.
We don't have that luxury and we can't see each other.
Behind the scenes here, Glenn and I have a chat going. And it's like, a couple more minutes, or we're going to play this song, or coming up next, and we just kind of talk about what's going to happen next. And during that interview, as I'm trying to listen to Philip, I'm like, Glenn, do you have anything? Glenn, got anything for Graham? Glenn, you got anything for Philip? Glenn's answer every time was, nope.
You're doing
nothing.
Great. I did put in you're doing great a couple times.
That's not you're doing great. It's you're doing great. Like, you keep going because I got nothing. Nope, nothing. Thanks, Glenn. But that was awesome.
Dawn,
those guys are just awesome. I mean, they're so
Dawn
cool.
Themes just typed in. You sounded very calm. Great interview. So there. You did good. I would have ruined it. I had interrupted. It wouldn't have been as professional and smooth and, you know, like, you're a major pro. I'm just a schmuck. I'm my worst husband.
You know, I would probably, if I would have known, I would have driven 18 hours to go to a clinic with Philip Dutton. So it's a good thing I didn't know about it.
You know, he is, I think I've interviewed him a couple times before in the past. And you know me, I don't get nervous for much. And Philip's so easy to talk to. But I got to tell you, those two are hard to tell apart.
Oh,
accent-wise and voice-wise.
Dreamy accents at the same time. It was just perfect. And I was trying not to, like, you know, sexually harass our guests and stuff, but that was hot.
And we have to thank someone, too, because, you know, we don't thank her enough. Jennifer worked hard.
Jennifer.
I mean, about 1,000 snails to put that together. So.
Yeah. Jennifer sends me an email. It's like, I've got 16 dates that we can try to get these guys on. How about Wednesday the 4th? And I was like, you know, that's the one date, like, you know, Lucas got shots yesterday. I didn't know if he'd be okay this morning. And she's like, I booked him for the 4th. Nutcracker. Chad's out there with him right now. He's been screaming this whole show. I thought I did pretty good keeping him under wraps, though. I'm like, husband, take the horse away. Take the baby away, not the horse.
So this is for Jennifer. Good job. You know, people don't realize we book, and I got to say this, too. This is kind of an exciting thing. This week we have gone over 3,500 episodes in all the different shows. And I think it was one of ours that actually took us over 3,500 episodes. We have had almost 4,500 guests on all the different shows.
Okay, how many times did I hear this before we started Horses in the Morning? What are you going to talk about, like, after the first day? I mean, it's like, that was really Chad. What are you going to talk about? It's like, you're going to talk about horses every day? What possibly? I'm like, the stories just present themselves to us. It's so ridiculous. I mean, granted, you live a life and I live a life that beget really good stories, but I don't know. It seems like we're out of time already.
I know, and every day we run out of time, and every day we have more that we haven't talked about that we had planned to talk about, and it just happens that way. But yeah, it's almost 4,500 guests, 3,500 episodes. Thanks to all our sponsors that over the years have made that, and thanks to our listeners. You know, our April. I think this is thanks to the app, actually, the new app that we have. April, 5 of the shows on the network set records again with the number of listeners and downloads, including Horses in the Morning. So hitting almost 38,000 unique listeners listened in to the show in April from 21 different countries.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So thank you all. We appreciate
thank
you being here.
You.
And thank you to Jennifer for all the hard work she does to get all these guests booked. And believe me, that if somebody asks me what's the hardest part, easiest part is sitting around talking with Jamie and Helena and Wendy and everybody. That's the fun part. The hard part is actually booking the guests, because it can take 10 emails to get a guest booked, and, you know, back and forth and this and that. And you know, one of the things we run into all the time, and Jamie, you don't see this so much because you're not on that end of it, but about three quarters of our guests want questions ahead of time. Well, we won't do it. We just don't do it. I mean, do Jamie and I look like we actually plan questions ahead of time?
I would laugh. We'd be like, what are you going to talk to me about? I have no idea.
And that's what we tell them. Look, you know, we just talk. We're just talking. You know, we just, whatever comes up is what we're going to talk about.
That's
and Frankie,
awesome.
In the beginning, you know, a couple times, I remember when we first had him on, he wanted to know. And Frankie's learned now that that ain't happening. We're just going to, and look, we started something with Frankie at the beginning of the show that we never even planned on talking about. So, you know, and how cool that he was involved in that whole race and everything. I mean, just, you know, those kind of things you can't plan. So we don't. We determined that if you can't plan the cool stuff, why plan anything?
Exactly. That's our disorganized lifestyle. That is officially points to the fact that Glenn and I are seriously not A-type people. There you go.
No.
Hey,
I
Glenn,
do want to say, I got one other thing yet. I have an announcement for tomorrow. Tammy Thrance is back, host of the Western Radio Show. She's going to be joining us once a month here on Horses in the Morning, first Thursday of every month, thanks to the Road to the Horse sponsorship. And, of course, Tammy is involved in the marketing of Road to the Horse, so we're going to have a Road to the Horse episode every Thursday or first Thursday of the month, and she will start tomorrow. We have some terrific guests. I think Tootie Bland is going to join us, who is the organizer for Road to the Horse and a true spitfire that makes Jamie and I look calm. So she should be here tomorrow morning as well, we're hoping. And that all starts tomorrow morning here live at 9 a.m. I just wanted to get that plug in. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, obviously I say at the end of every show, spay, neuter, geld. But I was wondering because, well, you know, we could do it on Friday too. Your decision. I really like that song, Bring It On Home, Chrome. And it might be like the last week we get to play it because he's going to bring it on home. So why would we tell him to, because he already did. So can we play it out or should we just play it again on Friday?
Let's play it again on Friday. Let's do it again on Friday.
Okay.
Why
good,
not?
Good. We got to play it on Friday. I mean, come on. It's like the day before the trip. I'm so excited. Like, I've already set my DVR. Like, I fast-forwarded, and, like, I'm going to miss it. I've actually, my neighbor was like, can I come over and watch the race with you? And I was like, you understand that there might be naughty potty words flying around, good or bad. I mean, there could be a serious emotional roller coaster, and I could be embarrassing to myself and or you or my family or whatever. I'm like, as long as you're okay with that, she's like, I can deal with it. So I've got a friend to watch the race with. Thank God my husband will get a little bit of a break. But I'm so excited, you guys. It's Chrome's time. We will talk to you guys again Friday. We've got really bad ads. Get your really bad ads in. If you have one, Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. A couple more days. Jennifer, do we have a prize?
We know what the prize
is. We have a top secret prize for Friday's show.
Oh, that means it's going to be good, you guys. It's going to be good.
Woo-hoo!
That means we have no idea. A-type.
Yeah, we have no idea. It's that planning thing we talked about.
I know, right? All right, you guys, have a great
something
day.
Cool.
Yeah.
Something fun and exciting, probably out of my closet.
Top